Welcome to the Quill Fiction Story Guild podcast, a podcast exclusively for members of the Quill Fiction Story Guild. I'm Frances O'Rourke Dowell, and we're reading my work in progress friendship album, 1934. Thank you for joining us, and as always, thank you for being part of the Quill Fiction community. Now, on to the story. Chapter 21. When was the last time Eula had been alone in a quiet house? Sitting at the kitchen table, sipping her coffee, she thought back over the past few months and had trouble locating even 2 minutes spent in solitude. She wasn't the sort of person who needed much time to herself, but she did enjoy a pocket of quiet here and there to sort through her thoughts. These days, she was always doing something, whether it was teaching her sewing classes, helping over at Matt and Elise's, or working in the garden with Maisie. She didn't mind a bit of it, but she had to admit that sitting in her silent kitchen, the morning sun streaming through the window, she felt a kind of peace she hadn't experienced much of lately. It was Dan who insisted she take the day off. Elise doesn't need you to come by every day, and the quilting company will run just fine without you. You don't have a class to teach or a group to oversee. You do have a flower garden that I imagine would appreciate some attention. You know Maisie, she doesn't hold flowers in high esteem. Eula laughed, remembering. Maisie was always making clear how little interest she had in anything she deemed solely for decorative use. She didn't like ribbons, bows, or ties, and she didn't hold much truck with petunias or posies either. After Eula explained that she'd planted marigolds so she could use the petals to dye fabric, Maisie granted them a grudging respect. It was the same with quilts. Maisie put up with their prettiness because they kept her warm at night. She did have a soft spot for animals, and she was devoted to baby Jean, especially now that she was starting to exhibit a little personality. Born 3 weeks early, Jean had taken a while to warm up to the world around her. But now she was a curious little thing, always looking around for new sights to study and consider. She had her fussy moments in the evenings, but usually could be calmed if someone carried her in their arms. Fortunately, her uncles were always happy to perambulate the baby, as Doug referred to their walks around Matt and Elise's small house and yard. Johnny liked to give Jean a tour of the new house, which was just a few days away from being finished. Eula had discovered that if Elise seemed low, the best thing to do was bring out her list of what needed to be done to make the new house feel like a home. Elise and Florence had spent the past week embroidering dish towels, and that seemed to cheer Elise to no end. The girl was doing better, there was no doubt about it, and Eula gave a lot of credit to Florence's daily visits. She'd always been fond of Florence and mightily impressed by the business that she'd built. But her recent devotion to Elise had made Eula appreciate her young friend in a new way. It also made her wonder if Florence might should go ahead and marry Arthur, have a family of her own. Well, she could spend all morning thinking about folks. Maisie, the baby, Elise and Florence, Doug and Johnny. But that would make this day off no different from any other day. But when was the last time Eula spent the morning in the garden without Maisie's constant chatter? It would be nice to listen to the birds for a change. Eula pushed herself away from the table and carried her coffee cup over to the sink. A few minutes later, in an old cardigan and her trusty work boots, she was on her way to the garden shed for a trowel. She'd start by weeding her coral bells, which were quickly being overrun by dandelions and bittercress. After her eyes adjusted to the dark, Eula realized the shed too could use a weeding. Maisie had taken a haphazard approach to putting the tools back in place, and there were pots scattered about that should have been put on a shelf. She was going to have to give that girl a talking to, Eula thought, as she leaned down to pick up a basket that appeared to have been flung aside with abandon. Groaning a bit, she reached to put it on the long shelf over the shed's door. But the basket wouldn't sit steady, so Eula put it back on the ground and reached up again, this time to see what was causing the problem. Her hand brushed over what felt to be a book. Yes, it was definitely a book, though Eula couldn't imagine what kind of book a person would store in a garden shed. It didn't occur to her until she pulled the book off of the shelf that of course it would be a book someone was trying to hide. Opening it, she saw that it was a diary, one written in Maisie's less than graceful hand. "You've got no business reading this," she told herself, but it was too late. Eula's eyes were already skimming over the pages. She told herself she wasn't really reading, she was just checking. For all of her bluster and forthright manner, Maisie held her cards close to her vest. Oh, every once in a while she'd give you a peek, an ace of diamonds here, a five of hearts there, but she didn't often fully reveal what she was thinking about. But look here. On April 27th, Maisie was absolutely forthright about her thoughts. "I am thinking about my daddy today. I have not seen him since Christmas, and he only came for one day. I am thinking about Bob and Hank and Roy and little Jack, who is no longer little, and baby Issa, who is no longer a baby. I don't know what the little ones even look like anymore. I am not sure where they are living or what kind of food they eat. I eat good food. That is for certain." Eula closed the book and put it back on the shelf. She found herself breathing through her nose, her mouth clamped shut, her eyes closed. How had she not known Maisie was thinking about these things? How had she not even suspected it? How had she been such a thoughtless, stupid woman? She shook her head and opened her eyes. Sometimes a person could be blind to things, she guessed. After those first few rocky months, Maisie had become a full-fledged member of their family. She sent weekly letters to her father, Dan's youngest brother Martin, and received letters in return. Martin's visits were infrequent, but he'd come a few times over the last year, most recently, as Maisie had noted, at Christmas. Eula knew that Maisie's brothers and baby sister were living with various aunts and uncles from her mother's side of the family, none of whom had been willing to take in a headstrong and energetic little girl. Eula's heart had hardened against these people, though she knew she ought to be more charitable. The fact was, their lack of interest had been in Eula's favor. She had very much wanted Maisie and was ecstatic to receive her into her home. Could she be a handful? Lord, yes. But had she made Eula and Dan's life fuller and richer and happier? Yes, indeed. That was the problem, though, wasn't it? That's what had gotten in the way of Eula thinking clearly on the matter. She was happy, and Maisie surely seemed happy, so why give any more thought to it? Why consider that a girl might miss her family, not just her father, but her brothers and sister as well? Still mad at herself, Eula left the shed and returned to the house. She'd already cleaned the kitchen this morning, but she took out her broom and dustpan and began sweeping it out again, just to settle herself down. There had to be something she could do to make it up to Maisie, to make up for her selfishness and thoughtlessness. Maybe she should... Eula stopped. Maybe she should what? Send Maisie home now that the girl had calmed down and grown more steady? Now that she was a good student? Mostly. and a hard worker who could sew and knit a little and raise chickens and put in a good vegetable garden? Surely her aunts and uncles would welcome Maisie into their homes now that she could be useful to them. The only problem was, Eula had no intention of letting her niece go. And that, she realized, was probably what kept her thinking too hard on what Maisie might want or who she might miss. Birdsong rang through the open window, a honeysuckle breeze in its wake. In 2 weeks, school would be out for the summer. Both Dan and Maisie would be free for a time. Why couldn't the three of them take a trip up to Akron for a few days, go see Maisie's brothers and sister, spend some time with Martin? Eula nodded to herself and put the broom back in the closet. That's exactly what they would do, she thought, as she headed outdoors for the second time that morning. Maisie could see her family, and her family could see how much she'd grown up. And then Eula and Dan would bring Maisie home to Milton Falls, because Milton Falls was where her home was. Eula wasn't letting that girl go for anything. She hated that Dorothy wasn't at the Bee the next day. There was so much Eula wanted to talk over. Well, if they were going to start holding the bees at building number 5, they ought to hold them on Thursdays so Dorothy could come up during her morning break. Not that they were really going to do that, Eula thought as she made her way up the stairs, sewing basket in hand. This was an experiment Florence was trying out. I'm so tired of my hit or miss attendance at the Bee, she'd complained the week before when they'd met at Eula's. Since next week is my week to host, I propose we meet on the 4th floor of the quilting company. Daisy and I will bring sandwiches and pie, and we can make coffee in the cafe's kitchen. Do say you'll indulge me just this once. They were gathering on the 3rd floor, a part of building number 5 that Eula knew well. In its most recent incarnation, it had been partitioned into 3 large rooms. The classroom, where Eula taught and held her Saturday Bee, a nursery, and a large open space that was used for employee meetings and casual gatherings. This is where Eula found Florence and the others. 2 long couches had been set up across from each other, separated by a coffee table, as though they were in someone's living room. A few feet away, 2 tables from the downstairs cafe bore platters of sandwiches along with cups, plates, 3 pies, and 2 pots of coffee on Sterno burners. It's practically the same as my living room, don't you think? Florence called when she saw Eula. What's your opinion? Should I get Jasper to bring floor lamps from downstairs? Eula sat down next to Emmeline, placing her sewing basket at her feet. As long as the light through the window stays strong, I think we should be all right with just the overhead lights. And I do think you've done a fine job of making everything feel homey up here. Florence beamed. You know, I'm tempted to turn the 5th floor into an apartment and move in. It's all musty and dusty up there now, but I think it could be whipped into shape with hardly any work at all. Why on earth would you want to leave your beautiful home? Bess asked as she lifted a forkful of pie, peach, it appeared to Eula, to her lips. Everything about it is lovely, and much too big for one person, Florence pointed out. My brother Harry just announced that he and his wife Mabel are expecting again, and while their house is perfectly nice, it's a bit small for a family of soon to be 5. And maybe one day 6 or 7. I think you'd be a fool to trade houses with Harry, Emmeline said. They haven't kept their place up at all. Mabel simply won't clean, and she doesn't make her housekeeper clean either. What does her housekeeper do then? Eula asked, accepting a cup of coffee from Florence, who was going around the group with the pot, offering refills. If she's not keeping house, I mean. She plays cards with Mabel all day, from what I understand, Florence said. She's often the 4th in bridge. Thomas says she's very good at bridge, Emmeline added. Anyway, Harry's house is too big for me, too, Florence said as she returned the coffee pot to the table. I think I'd be happy in a cottage. There are some dear little cottages over on Orange Street. She turned to Edwina. That's where your new beau lives, isn't it? Edwina gave her a patient smile.
Not a beau, just a friend whose name is Beau. But yes, Bonaparte does live in a charming little bungalow on Orange. It was passed down to him from an aunt. His older brother got the grand estate out near the river.
Well, ask Mr. Fellows if he knows of any houses near him for sale, Florence instructed, returning to her place on the Davenport. I really am serious about moving.
Eula looked at her.
What does Arthur think about this?
I don't know, Florence said with a shrug. Arthur no longer has a say in my affairs.
She paused.
Oh, that sounds so awfully cold, and I don't mean to be that way. Let me put it on the table, girls. Arthur and I have broken things off once and for all. It was a mutual decision. I'd finally come to the realization that I didn't want marriage and family, and Arthur simultaneously came to the realization that he was tired of waiting for me to make up my mind.
She paused again.
Oh, that sounds all wrong, too.
Emmeline leaned over and patted her sister-in-law on the arm. Turning to the others, she said,
I think Arthur realized soon after their scuttled wedding earlier this year that Florence's heart was with her business, not with him. He waited patiently for her to change her mind, and when it became clear to him that she would not, he trained his affections elsewhere. As we all suspected, he and Mrs. Weatherford have formed a bond.
Was this before or after Florence broke their engagement? Bess wanted to know.
After, it seems, Emmeline said. Perhaps only 10 minutes after, but Arthur Purefoy isn't a cad.
He might be a bit of a cad, Edwina said. After all, he hired the woman to be a secretary, and from all accounts, she has no secretarial skills. This is according to Mr. Fellows. Beau seems to have an ear for, community news.
Eula felt as though she'd tuned in to one of Dorothy's radio stories. Arthur Purefoy and Lena Weatherford? Yes, there'd been a spark between them that day they'd met in Eula's classroom. Anyone could see it. But Arthur was an engaged man at the time, and Lena had seemed so remorseful afterwards. Just another reason why Eula wished that Dorothy was there. Dorothy was so smart about this sort of thing. Had Eula misread Lena all along? She tried to remember back to the first time she'd met the young woman, when she'd shown up to the Monday night class. Mrs. Weatherford had been so sad that she'd missed the registration deadline, but had seemed to resign herself to the fact that the sign-up date had passed and, in any event, the class was full. Had she been indignant about the matter or tried to force her way in, Eula was certain the other women in her class wouldn't have been so sympathetic, nor would they have insisted that a spot be made for Mrs. Weatherford. But because the young woman appeared so forlorn in her acceptance of her fate, everyone had rallied around her, argued her case, made room. Had Lena known they would? Was she in the habit of making herself appear helpless or shy when she wanted something just beyond her reach? It occurred to Eula that she had no idea if one word of Mrs. Weatherford's story was true. Why, she didn't even know if the woman had a child. Oh, that was an awful thing to think. Eula didn't like being so suspicious-minded. And yet, she couldn't help it. Something about the situation was making her uneasy. But what was it? Dorothy would know. Eula just knew she would. For now, she leaned forward and asked Florence, How are you feeling about all of this?
I feel like I'm finally moving on with things, Lawrence admitted.
And to think, it only took me 6 years.
Better than a lifetime, Edwina said with a brisk nod. And you're none worse for the wear, if you ask me.
She's not even bent around the edges, Emmeline agreed.
I do so hate it when I get things in the mail that are bent or creased, don't you?
With that, the conversation moved on from Florence and Arthur and Lena Weatherford. Eula listened closely so she could tell Dorothy everything the next time she saw her. Which, come to think of it, might just be this afternoon. Eula found herself with a whole lot to talk about.
Thanks for joining us on the Quilt Fiction Story Guild podcast. We're reading Friendship Album 1934, a novel by Frances O'Rourke Dow, a production of Milton Falls Media, Incorporated. Copyright 2022, all rights reserved. Until next time, this is Frances O'Rourke Dow. Thank you for joining us.